Welcome back, everybody. It's the CC Podcast. It's the morning of Wednesday, September 20th. Mike Rutherford's here in Louisville, Kentucky. Dan Sinard is up there just outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. Happy to be with you here as we get ready for another weekend of football. Very happy to be here as we talk about a Louisville football team that is 3-0 for the first time since the Lamar Jackson Heisman Trophy winning season of 2016, which means 3-0 for the first time in the history of the CC Podcast. Dan, we've had some shitty starts to season since we started doing this podcast. I don't care how it happened. I don't care how we got here. We're going to nitpick some stuff as the episode goes on. But my God, it feels good to be talking about an unbeaten team here as we get into late September. It's refreshing.
We've been through a lot. There's no doubt. When we started, it was like the COVID basketball year. And like, it was actually a great year for the basketball team. And then COVID hit. And ever since then, not a lot of successful seasons. I know football, we had nice moments last year, but to start out 3-0 is, you know, like you said, yeah, there's some things to nitpick. The schedule hasn't been overly brutal yet, but I'm not going to cry about being 3-0. So we'll take it and we'll move forward on to Boston College.
Let us not forget, I got laid off from the radio show, I think 10 days after we started doing the podcast.
The pod curse, my gosh.
I literally thought it was because of the podcast when they started talking to me on the phone. I was like, is this because of the pod? I was like,
When I started the pod, remember I was like reading off notepad? Like, are you reading off a notepad? I was like,
crumpled papers you flipped over to side two in your heartwarming statement.
We've come a long way.
Have we? I don't know if we have.
Yeah, I don't think we have.
But regardless, it feels good to be 3-0 here. Reminder, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Home Field Apparel. If you're looking for the best gear for your team this football season, I'm assuming it's Louisville, but if it's not, that's fine too. Home Field Apparel's got you covered. They've got over 150 schools to choose from. The comfiest tees, the best hoodies, the best gear. They've got zip-ups. They've got all this stuff now. Homefieldapparel.com is the website. Use the promo code CHRONICLE15 when you check out. It's going to save you 15% off your first purchase. Also, follow Homefield Apparel on their social media channels, at Homefield Apparel without an E on Twitter, and at Homefield Apparel on Instagram. They have games of the week every week during college football season, which means you get deals on 8 of the 10 or 10 teams that are playing that weekend. If you want a nice Wyoming hoodie, if you've been eyeing that thing, it's a great time to make that happen. Again, homefieldapparel.com, promo code CHRONICLE15. All right, Dan, we're here to react. At least we'll start reacting to last weekend's game. Louisville takes down Indiana 21-14 in Indianapolis. Second time this season where it's been sort of a tale of two halves, although the Georgia Tech game was sort of a tale of three quarters versus one. But this game, Louisville starts, it looks like, blowout city, you know, fuck you, Tom Allen, Jeff Brom owns you, all this stuff. It's 21-0 at halftime. The script gets flipped in the second half, and Louisville winds up holding on for a 21-14 victory that I think left fans with a little bit of mixed emotions. Let me ask you this. Outside of just happy to be 3-0, what was your prevalent emotion after watching this game? What was your biggest takeaway?
I thought I would be more like, oh, man, we got some stuff to work on, but I don't know. I just feel like it was a little bit fluky between the onside kick and the Kevin Coleman drop at the 1 yard line. We got a touchdown called back.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just it didn't feel like 21-14 to me. It felt like we were in a little bit more control, though, you know, obviously momentum shifted over to the Hoosiers there in the second half. But like if this I'm obviously biased towards Coach Brom. But if this was like a Scott Satterfield 21-14 win, for some reason, I feel like I would be left being like, man, like we have such a long way to go, but I feel okay. I feel like there's fixable things, a couple things that didn't go our way. So I actually feel all right, even though it was just a 7-point victory, but I am glad we pulled it out because, checking Twitter after the first half, there was going to be a lot of deleted tweets out there if the Hoosiers had come back and won. So for Card Nation, I'm very happy that we held on.
I purposefully kept my tweets like a little bit because I saw all that stuff and I was like, oh boy. I was like, I don't know about this. I was like, let's pump the brakes just a little bit. And thankfully, nobody ended up having to delete anything. There were a couple of minor retractions, which is fine. But yeah. I'm actually right there kind of with you. I know I predicted on the last podcast a 23-20 win for us. I thought it was going to be a dogfight game. I thought it was going to be back and forth. I thought it was going to be ugly at times. And it's one thing, I think I even said this in the last podcast, like, you know, it's one thing to go into a game with that mindset, telling yourself it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, it's going to be tight. But when you're actually in it, you know, you're like, can we make a goddamn tackle? Like, you can't have it. There's no sort of clarity. And that's absolutely the way that I was in the second half on Saturday. But you know, leaving the game, having some time to sort of mull over it, I'm kind of there with you. I think the good still outweighs the bad. There's definitely some stuff that needs to get cleaned up. The second half was a little bit perplexing. But like you said, you also easily could have won that game by a couple of scores. You could have made it a little bit easier on yourself. You know, the second touchdown pass to Thrash, which is the best throw that Jack Plummer's, I think, made this season,
yep,
gets overturned by a holding call. Coleman, you know, is a bad decision, I think, by Plummer to throw the ball there instead of just running for a first down or having an easy dump off for a first down. But Kevin Coleman still should catch the ball. It hits him right in the chest and ends up being an IU interception. And the IU onside kick changed everything. Real quick on the onside kick, because I saw a lot of people that were like, how could you not be prepared for that? It's 21-0. Indiana needs something drastic to switch momentum. If you go back and watch, and I did, I watched the kick, like our front line, I think, was ready for it. I think they'd been told, hey, this is a possibility. Let's not go back into our kick return. Like, they don't budge. It's not one of those onside kicks where everybody's already moving backwards where the kicker you know, puts his toe on the leather. They were ready for it, and it was a perfect onside kick, and it bounced right to the dude. And you know, kudos to their special teams unit for making a big play, and it did shift everything. I think you know, their quarterback Taven Jackson settled down a little bit after that. We had some miscues in the secondary, but I think my biggest takeaway is this is twice now in three games where we've been in that situation where it's like somebody has to make a play, and somebody has to make a winning play, and we've done it. And how many times in the pod the last 3 years have we been like, man, there were five or six plays where if we just make one of them, we win that game, and nobody did it. I mean, we're going to talk about Boston College in a little bit. The Boston College game last year was maybe the biggest game like that, where it was like we had to find a way to lose that. You know, all we have to do is make one of six or seven plays, and we win. And this year, I mean, Georgia Tech, you need a big play. Des Tell causes the fumble on Tech's potential go-ahead drive. On Saturday, you need a big play. Louisville comes up with that fourth in goal stop where it's, I think it was T.J. Quinn was the first man there. Stanquan Clark also got there. It was the worst play call in the history of goal line play calls.
I mean, we got bailed out a little bit.
But we got to take advantage. Yeah, I mean, I sort of have been rolling my eyes at the IU fans that I see on my timeline that have been super critical of Tom Allen. I'm like, you know, he had IU in the top 15, for Christ's sakes, a couple years ago. Maybe give him some time. And then I watched that game, and I was like, holy shit. Like, they used their two timeouts in the second half on a 3rd-and-14 play where they ended up calling a screen pass, and then on a 4th-and-1 where they end up calling a run play where Jackson drops back like 5 yards before he hands the ball off. I would have been a little bit pissed off there. But then, you know, Louisville also, they need two first downs to run the clock out. They get two first downs to run the clock out. So props to them. Props to the defense for stepping up and making some big plays. Again, I thought the good outweighed the bad. Let me ask you this, because I think this is the big topic of discussion when it comes to this U of L team through three games. When we're looking ahead at the schedule, how good can we be? How long can we stay unbeaten? How many games can we actually win? After watching him play for the last 3 weeks, where are you with Jack Plummer now?
It's tough. Like, I feel like I'm okay with it, but he always leaves me wanting like a little bit more. And it just, like I said this last pod, it just might be his style of play that I'm not used to after watching, you know, Lamar and Malik Jackson or Malik Cunningham for however long. But I thought he played a pretty good, I'm not really upset with anything that he did on Saturday. So I'm really want to see it against, you know, some of the top teams on our schedule. And I think we'll have a better read then. But right now, I think he's doing what he needs to do. Like I said, I mean, yeah, he could have ran for that one first down, but that pass did hit Kevin Coleman, you know, right in the chest. That's a play that you got to make. He had a touchdown called back, and I think we'd be singing probably a different tune if those two plays had been reversed. But he did underthrow Jamari, you know, on that first drive, and then we ended up missing the field goal. So, you know, there's some good and some bad. And then you kind of hope with each game he just, you know, keeps improving a little bit. And I feel like we've seen that. Like I said, I don't think he did anything that was overly, you know, drastically bad on Saturday. So I'm okay with it for now.
Yeah, here's where I am. I think that he very clearly has a good understanding of the offense. I think he's a really cerebral player. Jeff Brohm trusts him. You see them talking on the sidelines all the time. And, you know, I think that he's getting better with making decisions quickly, especially when it's a simple throw that's out there. What it boils down to for me is I think he can be a good quarterback at this level. I don't think he has the arm strength to be like an elite level, top tier ACC quarterback. And I think there are just some throws out there that he can't make. And that's a simple fact of it. And look, there are a lot of college quarterbacks like that. I think he knows where the ball is supposed to be most times. There are just instances where we've got some dynamic wide receivers that are very fast. He just can't get them the ball where it needs to be.
Do you think it's an arm strength thing?
I do.
For me, when I watch it, I feel like he's trying almost too much to put too much touch on it. I don't know. I somewhat disagree with that. I think he's got the arm strength in there. I think sometimes he tries to get too cute with his passes, but I would like to see him just like completely air one out one time so we can actually see it.
I mean, there's not been one deep ball so far this season where it's been like on a line where it's been zipped. And I think that, you know, when you get to 3 weeks into a year, it's kind of like, oh, he just can't do that. And that's kind of where there was a 3rd-and-4 play where he threw a really good pass to Jamari Thrash, and it was kind of like we were on the short side. The short side of the field was the left side, and he threw it to the right marker, and it just took forever to get there. But he like knew it. Like he timed it perfectly to where like it was going to be a completion, but he can't get that ball out there with a lot of oomph, and I think that's what it is. And look, Brohm has talked a couple of times now about him stepping into throws, planting his feet, you know, throwing the ball with conviction. I think that will help. You mentioned the first pass where he couldn't really step into it because there was some pressure coming and it was massively underthrown. That wasn't the issue for me. I think the issue was he didn't see it until it was like a second too late. I think if he sees it right on the drop back, if there's not one defender within 25 yards of Thrash, he probably makes that throw and we're up 7-0 early. But because he waited, the pocket collapsed a little bit and he couldn't get enough on it. But I think that sometimes he doesn't step into passes, sometimes he throws the ball off balance. But even when he does, it feels like there's just way too much air under those throws. And I don't think it's and maybe I'm wrong. Like maybe he does have the arm. I think it's just he doesn't. I think he's tapping that button on the video game instead of holding it down.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, I don't want to say it's a confidence thing, but he might be a guy where, you know, if he hits one of those long balls like completely on the money, then things will start, you know, being a little bit more easy for him. But I will say one thing that's a little bit underrated about him. I mean, he made probably the winning play using his legs at the end of the game. I think that's nice when he gets out of the pocket. I would like to see him, you know, on those RPOs, he looks pretty good. But when he gets out of the pocket, if there's a lane there, I mean, I think he's got the legs to go ahead and take it. So I've been pleasantly surprised by that aspect of his game.
Yeah, me too, for sure. I like that Jeff addressed, I can't remember if it was at the Monday press conference or in the post game on Saturday, where he talked about before every game I go to Jack and I say, you're going to have to make 6 or 7 plays with your legs in this game. And he says, you know, I tell him, we're going to have a couple of design runs for you, but there are going to be multiple times where, you know, the pass blocking is just not there, or a blitz gets home, and you're going to have to keep a play alive and then get the 6, 7, 8 yards that are available for you. And he definitely did that on Saturday multiple times. And he's done it before, too, which has been really good to see. And you're right, he's not Malik Cunningham or even Stephon LaForest, but he moves well enough to get what he needs to get. And I think, you know, Jeff Brohm being a quarterback who definitely uses legs is always going to ask his guys to do that every now and then. But I think I give Jack and Jeff both props for the first half adjustments they made. I thought it was very apparent after the first couple of drives that IU was like, we're going to dare you to throw deep. Like we're pressure coverage, cover two, like we're going to bump you at the line. We're taking away the short passing game. We're not going to let your studs get space, you know, one-on-one with us on the edge. And like we finally hit on that big throw to Jamari Thrash for 85 yards, and I think that opened things up a little bit. It allowed the run game to get going. Jawar, once again, ran the ball very effectively. It was good to see Maurice Turner back. But I thought the first half play calling just kept Indiana on their toes. It was like every time they were trying to guess what we were going to do, Jeff knew, and you know, they guessed wrong, and we were able to burn them a little bit. Not so much in the second half, but the first half, it was nice to see a nice little run-pass combination. I felt like we were well balanced.
That drive that we finished, that I think it was the second drive where Turner finished it off. I mean, that was an absolute play calling clinic. I mean, we mixed it up. We threw short. There was a nice third down catch, and after the catch run by Thrash, God, he's so good. I mean, he really is good. Yeah. We got a good one in him. And then, yeah, God, we just got such a nice mix of running backs. Like, I'm confident in anyone that we have in the backfield, and that's always a nice feeling. So I think we're going to need some more someone else besides Jamari to step up in the wide receiver group. I know Chris Bell had a drop. I believe Callaway had a drop. I don't remember. I think the pass might have been a little bit behind him. I can't remember. But, you know, I think the further along we get in the season, I think, you know, Jamari's going to start seeing more coverage kind of float his way. So we're going to need someone else to step up from there. But, yeah, I thought the first half play calling was a clinic. And then I think we just got kind of put back on our heels immediately in the second half. And I would have liked to see us run the ball a little bit more.
I'm with you on the another receiver needing to step up too. It was good to see Amari Huggins-Bruce make a few plays on Saturday. He got I think they had a couple of design runs for him. One worked out really well, but Kevin Coleman, I think, is the guy that you circle and say would be good to see him step up at some point in the relatively near future, because we know he has the ability, and he's had too many drops and I think a couple of passes that have been underthrown.
I'm waiting for Bell to break out. Like, I don't know.
He could be so good.
I think so too. I was really disappointed when he dropped that pass, but I know he hasn't gotten a ton of looks this year, but he just seems like someone, like, once you get the ball in his hands, like, he could probably make something good happen.
Chris Bell really reminds me of Scott Long from back in the day, where
everyone
who sees him in warmups, everyone who sees him in practice is like, this dude is a budding star. And with Scott, like, it happened a little bit in his last season. Unfortunately, it was, you know, Cragthorpe, and it was, I think, 2008. And he just never really popped the way that people were predicting. I'm hoping that doesn't happen with Chris Bell.
His touchdown against South Florida.
Yeah.
One of the DL loudest Papa John's Cardinal Stadium or L&M Stadium moments. Like,
dude, they were ranked and awesome. They were ranked and that got us to 5-2. And we're like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. And then we lost 5 straight to end the season. We're never good again. Yeah, we get blown out every single game, I think, after that. We beat Cincinnati on the road when they were ranked. And, you know, we beat South Florida when they were
the
ranked.
The last good Craig moment there.
It really was. Like, that was Craig's last stand, was that game. Now, Dan, a lot of people were giving you credit for inspiring the team on Saturday after telling your harrowing story of getting punched in the face on a cruise boat by an IU student. They did it for Dan, hashtag do it for Dan. But a lot of people also were giving you the sole blame for for special teams performing poorly after you were so effusive with your praise last week, and then Brock Travelstead promptly comes out, misses a field goal, shanks a punt. Special teams were not good. What do you have to say for yourself on both fronts?
All right, so I'll give you kind of my game watching scenario on Saturday was not ideal. It was on my phone from my daughter's soccer game over until my son's, and my daughter's my son's soccer game. Like, the parents, like, I interact with a lot, and I'm, you know, they kind of know what's going on. My daughter's, you know, soccer team. Very, you know, like, hey, let's go, Lila, come on, kick the ball. And, like, I'm sitting there watching the game, and as soon as he missed that field, I go, fuck me, he missed it. And, like, Kim was like, Danny. I was like, I'm sorry. Like, so, I was like, oh, man. That was tough to see. And then the onside kick, and I was like, oh, no. Then the 18-yard punt, I was like, God damn it. But, that's going to need to get straightened out moving forward, and I'll wear that one.
I guess I didn't realize how, like, numb I've gotten. Like, I've never been I still don't think the last few years that I've been a fan that's been, like, just sitting and watching games and not talking. But I guess I've been way more into it this year because Mary's like, I've forgotten how insane you could be during these games. And I guess that's the Brom bringing it out of me this year, just having more excitement than I've had in the past. Speaking of, I think that we need to at least spend a couple of minutes addressing what Cincinnati did / did not do last weekend in Nippert Stadium. Let me just say, I'm relieved that I can be a hater on this because after they beat Pitt on the road, I was very concerned this was going to be like...
We all were. It wasn't just you. We all were.
Like, they're picked to finish second to last in the Big 12. Scott Satterfield, Big 12 Coach of the Year, and all these stories written by national people that love Satterfield about, glad you got what you wanted, Louisville, and all this bullshit. And instead, the man loses to Miami of Ohio for the first time in 17 years. They lose the battle of the victory bell in a game where they had every opportunity to win. I mean, we talked about how one of the defining things of the Satterfield era was just not making a winning play. Cincinnati had 55 chances to win that game. They didn't get it done. Miami wins in overtime. And look, you can say whatever you want. It was a bad, bad break in the kick blocked. It was a bad skid. The fact of the matter is Scott Satterfield has a phobia of rivalry trophies. He hates them. He doesn't want them around. He doesn't want them to win. He was glad Cincinnati lost to Louisville last year because he didn't have to have the keg of nails. He never touched the Governor's Cup trophy. He doesn't want the victory bell. And look, hand up. I'm going to be a hater here. I'm being petty. I enjoyed seeing them fall in that game at Nippert Stadium on Saturday night.
I'll tell you what. Just like you give me credit for the special teams, I'll take credit for this. I had Cincinnati's team total at 29.5. I took the over. They're at 24, and I'm following the game. They had, it was an astronomical amount of opportunities down inside the 15 and 10 to score.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So I lost the bet, but I was like, hey, it's just because I bet the over. So I'm going to take sole credit for that. But no, I have a lot of cousins up in Cincy that were texting me after the Pitt game. They're like, I thought you said this guy sucked. We just beat Pitt. And I'm like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I literally typed, I'm like, just wait. And then in the back of my mind, I'm like, are they going to beat Oklahoma? I was very relieved to see a loss there to Miami, Ohio, the Fighting Red Hawks. So, anyways, I will, I don't know how the season's going to turn out, but if that's a sign of things to come, it might be a tough year for Scott here in year one in the Big 12.
I don't know if you watched the video, the celebration video that Miami of Ohio put out there, their players going over to their crowd at Nippert, which, by the way, Cincinnati did this whole thing where it was 100 years of night games at Nippert Stadium, the best night environment in college football, and they fall flat on their face against a rival from the MAC. But all the Miami players take the bell over, and they should have the video, and one of the players is like, ring that motherfucker, and which is objectively one of the funniest things that you can say after a football game where 300-pound dudes are just slamming into each other for 3.5 hours after all that testosterone and just pure adrenaline. Be like, ring that motherfucker, talking about a bell. I mean, I laughed my ass off. It was the best clip of the college football season so far.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's everyone's saying, I think Scott's just allergic to rivalry trophies.
He hates them. He does not like beating in-state rivals. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I'll tell you what, any parting thoughts here on IU? Because, again, I think the prevailing theme is got the job done, made the winning plays, offense looked great in the first half, clearly some stuff to work on in the second half, but 3-0 is 3-0.
Two things. One, shout out Cameron Kelly.
Yes, yes.
Favorite name on the team, plus he played an awesome game. And that's nice. It'll be interesting when Josh Minkins gets back, how they rotate that, because he was all over the place on Saturday, and it seems like he's kind of starting to learn the defensive scheme there. So it was nice to see him kind of make an impact on the game.
ACC defensive back of the week, recently named.
Yeah, I know. So that's great. Two, man, I think we got to see more from our D-line. I think we're going to – especially this Boston College game, and we'll talk about it. I don't think their O-line is anything to write home about. We need to start getting some more quarterback pressures here. I think that's going to be huge for us going forward because we're going to have to create turnovers. I think Jeff said we only had 10 offensive possessions on Saturday. And with the Jeff Brohm team, you want as many possessions as possible. I think we need to wreak a little more havoc, try to cause more turnovers. But, you know, I think it starts up front and trying to get pressure on the quarterback. So I'd like to see a little higher level of play out of them.
Yeah, just two sacks in three games is concerning. Now, they've had a decent amount of quarterback pressures. I feel like Ashton Gelada is in the backfield a lot.
Yeah, he's an exception. I feel like he's usually back there.
But you need somebody. I think the issue is when you get that pressure off the edge from a guy like Ashton, you want the quarterback to move into another pass rusher who's right there to come up with the sack, and that's not happening because a lot of times it seems like he's the only person who's getting back there. So I would like to see the middle of that defense do a little bit more. And also in the second half, they just got kind of dominated at the point of attack by an Indiana team that probably should not be doing that to you. I mean, Indiana ran the ball pretty effectively. Taven Jackson, I thought, had more time to throw in the second half, and that led to him doing more damage with his arm. Also, props to Tom Allen for thinking that Jackson is way more of a runner than he is, because every time they called a design run for him, I was like, thank you for that, because he's not nearly as athletic as I think that coaching staff believes he is.
I'll give him credit in the fact it feels like every time we blitz, like, they had like a hot route read that they got rid of the ball immediately, and that it kind of negated our blitzing, whether, you know, we weren't disguising it well enough or what. So I was, you know, I said going into the week it would be nice to blitz a little bit more, but they seem to pick it up and kind of burn us on it. So we're going to have to do a better job kind of disguising those moving forward.
3-0 is 3-0. That's all that matters. And look, we've won two of these games against power conference opponents away from home. So there's something to be said for that. Obviously, we'll know more about this team as we continue to go through these weeks. And there's a reason why, like, the American public is not necessarily a full-on believer yet. There's a reason why a lot of U of L fans, I think, are reserving their excitement a little bit. But it just feels good to be this deep into a season and not have a loss yet.
Yeah,
it's been a long time.
There's not a lot of – I mean – 20-something, I think, 3-0 teams left. So I could be wrong about that. I thought I glanced at that on Twitter. But
sure, it's fine.
Yeah. We'll roll with it. 3-0 is 3-0. And, we'll buckle up here for BC.
I think you forget. I was kind of doing it in my head going back season by season after we won on Saturday. There haven't been that many 3-0 starts, like, in the modern era of U of L football. Even some good teams have lost in the first week. I mean, in the first 3 weeks, that 2017 team where Lamar comes back, that Clemson loss was in week three. Bobby's first team that ended up winning 9 games and playing Georgia in the Belk Bowl, they lost to Virginia in week three. It's a rarity to get to this point, and I think they still got a couple more games to go before it feels like they have a chance to be an underdog in the game. So, very excited that we got the job done. Let's take some questions from Twitter. We asked for some. You guys responded. I'm going to try to read these because I got so much shit for reading the one last week about the family question. People were like, I was in my car with my parents. How am I supposed to react to that? I'm like, I'm so sorry. I started reading it before I read what exactly it entailed. That was on me. I'm so sorry. Here we go. Clayton says, since we're favored against BC and have a chance, good chance of winning, how tired are you already of the only took Brohm 4 games to win 4 on Twitter yet? Oh, that's absolutely going to happen. If we win, if Brohm starts 4-0, it's like, oh, Brohm got 4 games in 4 weeks. Kenny Payne took a whole year. Which let's just pretend basketball doesn't exist for a few weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's football season. We'll discuss the basketball team once October starts. So, I'm gonna enjoy what's going on in front of me. I'm gonna play it one game at a time.
Having said that, a lot of people did bring up the same topic that they want us to address, which is the news. I guess it was this morning officially. What's happening with Trenton Flowers in Australia? So Trenton Flowers famously leaves the Louisville basketball team last month, takes a deal with an NBL team in Australia, the Adelaide 76ers, I think, or 36ers, whatever the hell they are, and a big part of the reason is he can play point guard there. He sees himself as a big point guard. That's how he wants to be drafted. And I saw Sam Vecenie, who watches more basketball than anybody I know, was watching his first game there, and he was like, this is pretty bad. Trenton Flowers can't even get the ball across half court against these guys. And then today, I guess the Adelaide coach announced that the whole Flowers at point guard experiment is over. They're moving him back to the wing. He handled the news well. So, look, I mean, I don't know. Who knows how good Trenton Flowers winds up being? Who knows how good of a person he ends up being? I do think he had some shitty parents. He had some bad advice here. I think it was a poor move, and it's kind of biting him now, because this is something that NBA scouts are going to see. If you wanted to prove you could play point, you went overseas to do it, and you failed miserably, and that's not going to help your draft stock. It's already hard enough to be a high draft pick when you're playing overseas and when you're struggling to get eyeballs on you, when all the news coming out of your run over there is not good. That makes it just that much tougher. So I don't know. Buyer beware is all I'll say.
No, 100%. No, and I was just gonna add to that. It's a kid at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, so I want him to be successful, whatever he does. So I do have sympathy. It seems like he may have got some advice that went awry. I don't really have a lot of sympathy for the parents in this situation. So it seems like they kind of took a money grab and ran. So, you know, really, I know it's easy to be bitter as a fan, but for the kid, I do want it to work out.
Sometimes Papa doesn't know best, and I think that's what we found out here. Albert says, it's Trinity Say next week. Who you got?
I mean, obviously I'm going to roll with my Rocks, although things are a little bit rocky over there. I heard they're starting a freshman quarterback. You know, as loyal as I am to my Trinity Rocks, I mean, you and I both know this. I'm a Dublin Jerome guy now. so shout out Dublin Jerome. But no, I'm always going to ride with the Rocks here.
You know what? We're honest on the pod. We just say things. This is the most honest podcast in Louisville. Trinity hired the wrong coach. I'm out there. I'm putting it out there. I'm taking the shot. If you have a losing record through the middle of your third season at Trinity, I think there's an issue there. The Rocks, they shouldn't be getting just destroyed by mail. They shouldn't lose to Ballard last year. They've got work. But all they needed was a non-fifth grade offense last year to beat Sanex in that game. They didn't have one. So I think Sanex wins on Friday. I think the Trinity needs to take a long, hard look in the mirror after this season. I think you hired the wrong guy. What do you want me to say?
Yeah, no, it's tough. So it's just so different, because when we were there, I mean, geez, we one sophomore, junior, senior year. So it's weird to see them actually losing games to in-state teams.
Let's see. Kevin Skagg says, what is the most boring sport? Dan, what do you think, which sport is the most boring?
Oh my gosh, that is actually a great question. Most boring sport. I mean, old Dan would have said soccer, but now that's like all I do is watch soccer, and I've come to appreciate it a little bit since I'm at the soccer field just about every day watching my kids. That's a tough one. I mean, bowling? Like, I'm not a big bowling guy. You know, bowling's not bad to play, but you know what it is? I can't stand volleyball. Not women's volleyball, like, shout out women's volleyball. As far as me, like, playing it and, like, watching on the Olympics, it bores me to death.
I love volleyball. I don't think it's boring at all. Like, I think it moves fast. It's exciting. The points are usually pretty short. I'm
changing
my
answer.
Volleyball.
It's NASCAR. NASCAR.
Okay. Yeah. NASCAR, I'm with you. I think cycling is the most boring sport. Like, people talk about the Tour de France. If I turned, I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, what am I watching? This is just, there's no action. Genuine Risk says, what's the best high school shooter you've ever seen?
I mean, do you got a mirror?
Come on.
Yeah, I know.
They call him the spark plug, folks.
Yeah. Heck, I played against Chris Lofton at Mason County.
That's where I was going.
Doesn't get much better than that. That kid could pull from just about anywhere. So, is he still the all-time leader in threes in NCAA?
No, he got passed. It was he got passed to Tennessee, I think, too. I don't know, but that was going to be my answer. We watched him play. I watched him play you guys in that, whatever that tournament was that you played. Was the Fifth Third Bank tournament?
Yeah, whatever, down in Lexington.
In Lexington. And he was
what a stacked tournament, by the way. It's like Chris Lofton, Rondo, OJ Mayo, Bill Walker.
You guys beat him.
There was some talent.
You guys beat Rose Hill.
OJ Mayo. Yeah.
Dan Senard, better at basketball than OJ Mayo. I think that's the takeaway from today's podcast. But yeah, Lofton would be my answer. Lofton still, by the way, the SEC's all-time leading three-point shooter.
Gotcha. Okay.
But not NCAA. Let's see. Caleb says, how much do you think Dan's personal grudge with IU motivated the team? And what other personal grudges do you all have with future opponents on the schedule? Hashtag do it for Dan.
Well, I don't know if the camera caught this, but after Jamari's first touchdown, he lifted up his jersey and there was a white shirt that said, do it for Dan. And he was pointing at it. Don't know if the cameras caught it, but I mean, obviously, I know that was the main motivation of the team. I'm really happy about it. I'm humbled by it. And I need to pick some other grudge, I think, with Boston College and other teams moving forward.
I did like the number of people who said that you had to get punched in the face by an opposing fan for every game now. And look, yeah, let's just say that your dad is a big Notre Dame fan. He's an alum.
Yeah,
we can set this up in a couple weeks. I want to see Bob Snard just fucking sock you in the face before the game.
He'd be very excited to line up for it. I know that. I can't say I know a whole lot of Boston College fans. I know a couple of NC State fans who are super, super nice and would never do that. But, I need to drum up some sort of altercations with fan bases moving forward.
I don't know if I have any personal grudge. I mean, NC State, they gave me and John a ton of shit a few years ago when we called their stadium docile. Like, a bunch of their NFL players tweeted about it. Like, that's probably as close as I've gotten. Like, I don't think I've got a personal, but I mean, UK, obviously, but besides that, I don't have any. My daughter's not in Virginia.
I really, really want to win this Boston College game because I think that NC State game, like, has a chance to be an awesome Friday night environment. I think it will regardless, but I think that'll be a really, really fun game to watch.
I totally agree. I think they play on Friday night this week, too. I think I can't remember who they play. It's somebody. Oh, they play Virginia because it's Brandon Armstrong versus his old team.
Gotcha. So that'll be a win.
Yeah, it should be. Texter says, or not Texter, I'm back on the radio. Carino says, does Jamari Thrash have his Zay Flowers performance versus BC this Saturday? I hope so, because Zay Flowers fucking destroyed us last year.
Yeah, Zay is destroyed. I mean, he destroyed the Bengals secondary on Sunday. That guy's really good. So, I'm interested to see, like, from an NFL standpoint, what people think of Jamari Thrash. Because to me, he kind of has everything that you want in a wide receiver. He seems fast. He's shifty. He gets in and out of his route. So I'm kind of interested to see what the next level thinks about him. But I am very glad that he decided to join our team over the offseason, because I would be interested to see our wide receiving corps without him.
When the Ravens drafted Zay Flowers, I think 85% of his highlight film was from that U of L game last year.
There was like a couple of them I was like, I don't even know what to do there. He just like stole the ball off our defender.
I mean, the world is seeing right now just how bad Phil Dracovich can be. His transfer to Pitt for the season, and we made him look like, you know, Josh Allen in that game because he just threw it to Zay Flowers every play. It was pretty bad. Those days are gone, thankfully. Gil Bolberg says, how much in student loans do you owe, and approximately how long will it take for you to pay it back in full? What an interesting question. I know I still have student loans left from college and my one year of law school. I think I have like $16,000 still left, but we're paying it like we're not moving very quickly on my loans because Mary has she went to pharmacy school, which is like $1 billion. Yeah. Thankfully, she's the breadwinner, so we're paying off her. We're more focused on her loans than my measly loans, all things considered.
Yeah, we paid off my wife's loans from. She went to school for grad school for occupational therapy, so we paid those off about 5 years ago. And I'm excited for you guys to get there because it's a glorious day.
We're getting close. It feels good. Zach Brady says, "How nervous is Dan every time Kevin Coleman is about to catch a punt?"
Like I said, I'm still. Obviously he dropped that pass, but it wasn't a punt. I have full confidence in Kevin.
You were overly confident last week on the pod. That's why
I know. I'm sorry. I know, but no, I still. He looks super calm back there. I think he's gonna bust one at some point, but for now. He's fine just, you know, going back there and doing what he has to do.
UofL Sports News says there's one scholarship remaining for the basketball team. Let's say they give it to Danny. A lot of Dan questions today. What's his stat line look playing 20 minutes per game? Oh, boy.
I mean, come on. Like, right now, obviously, it would be atrocious. Like, 2003, I think I could put up, you know, 1.5 to 2 points a game with, you know, I'm not going to play a lot of minutes, but I'll tell you right now.
He's saying you're playing 20 minutes a game. That's the question.
20 minutes a game. Oh, yeah. 100%. I'm averaging probably 3.5 to 4 points a game. I'm getting enough shots up. I am getting enough shots up that I'm going to score. Now, it doesn't say anything about my defensive stats because that's going to be a disaster. But, like, you know, back then, you give me some space. It doesn't matter who I'm playing. I'm going to knock it down.
I mean, were you averaging 4 points per game back in 2003?
I wasn't getting 20 minutes a game. I went through spurts. Like, I
you did.
You know, I had like spurts where I'd score like 9 to 12 points, you know, for 3 to 4 games, and spurts where I wouldn't score for 3 to 4 games. So very hit or miss, but I just needed some space.
I think you and I may have been the two most streaky athletes in Trinity High School history. Like, I would go like weeks without getting a hit, and then I'd have like 7 in 2 games. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, it was very much the same on the same level, which is why we cheered for each other at times when sometimes we didn't even get into games. Yeah, you made a sign for me, Slugger Field, my junior year. I didn't get in the game against St. X.
I did make a sign, yeah. Oh, man, that was great. Yeah, you guys made a sign for me at the Ballard game. Same thing.
You actually got in trouble for looking up and laughing at it during the game.
Yeah, that was when we played Brandon Bender. Oh, man, that was good times.
He was good. Let's see. Ed DeRosa, shout to Horse Racing's Finest, said, what's the best Italian restaurant in Louisville? I know my answer. I think we may have the same one.
Yeah, I like Silvio's in St. Matthews.
Same.
Is that yours? Yeah.
Yeah, we know that the owners, the Melillos, they grew up across the street from my mom and her family. It's awesome. I love it. Every time I go in there, I've never had a bad meal. I mean, I love, like, Valare. I love a couple other ones, but Silvio's is my spot for Italian.
They used to have, like, actual Melillo's restaurant before they
–
this was, like, 20 years ago, and, like, my parents used to just – that was their spot. So, Sinards are big fans.
Robert says, two questions. One, how shocked were you by Trevor's ACT score? And two, how can we be a 2-touchdown favorite over BC when their 3 games have been decided by a total of 8 points? It sounds like a trap to me. One, I was not surprised at all by Trevor's ACT score. I called it. I nailed it on the head. He got a 14. It's exactly what I predicted.
Your tweet is like about the video you sent out. It's like, oh, he got the same score as this kid. That kid was like, Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Like, one of my favorite videos. Oh,
he's like, well, I got a 14. He's like so depressed about it. Trevor played celebratory music the entire show. He was so happy. He's like we come back from break. It's like, because I'm on top of the world. Hey, like, he was so excited that he got a 14. He thought, I think you get a 12 for filling out your name, but he was very pumped. Shocked at all. The spread, I mean, I think people don't know what to do with BC. They lost at home to Northern Illinois. They barely beat Holy Cross, and then they almost knocked off the number 3 team in the country. So I think that it's, you know, what's the real BC? I think we're going to find out more on Saturday. But it's an interesting spread for sure. All right, I guess the last question we have to move on. CardsFan922 says, the last time I asked a question, Dan made fun of it, and I got roasted in my group chat. Can you make up a question you want to answer and then be like, wow, great question, CardsFan922? Or remember 2011's throw to Devontae Parker? Do we need to use that for Thrash now? Sure. Great question, CardsFan922. Throw it up for Jamari, just like we used to for Devontae, once every series.
Yeah, I know we laugh about that, but I there'll probably be one game where we're saying that when we're like down in the fourth quarter and we can't get anything going, we're like, just throw it to Jamari, just get him the ball.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Like, already at this point, when it goes too long, I'm like, just get him the ball, just make a play. I mean, he was, I don't have the Kelly Dickey tweet in front of me. I think he was like 45 yards short at halftime of breaking Louisville's single game receiving record, which was Harry Douglas in 2007. And he didn't have a catch in the second half. So it was kind of, yeah, that was a little bit disappointing. But I think from now on, you know, he's going to have it thrown his way.
I think
a lot.
The most impressive part about him, I'm not saying he's not working hard, but it just is like some receivers, it just looks like, God, they're really grinding there on the outside. And, you know, he's going to need an ice bath after the game. Like Jamari, it just looks so effortless and easy. Like he just, you know, whether it's catching long passes, whether it's short passes and him making moves and, you know, running 15 yards and avoiding a big hit. Like he does it so effortlessly. And I think that's the most impressive part about him.
He's a beast. I think when he's like fourth in the country right now in receiving yards per game. I know Jawar Jordan's up there in both yards per carry and rushing yards per game. Like he's we have some game breakers for sure. Let's talk a little bit about Boston College coming to town this weekend. Look, it's Kim Schatzel inauguration week kickoff day. We don't lose on Kim Schatzel inauguration week kickoff day. It's also like, if you're a human being, it's your day at L&N Stadium. It's like Kids Day, Scout Day, yeah. Like, you know, Parents Day, you know, Veterans Day. It's like every, if you're not being honored, I'm sure you can write a letter to U of L and they'll find a way to get you honored on Saturday. But we can't lose on a game like this. BC, like I mentioned a second ago, they lose at home to Northern Illinois in week one. They gut out a win over Holy Cross by 3 in week two in a game that was delayed a ton of times by the weather. And then last week, they, you know, damn near knock off Florida State, had a bunch of chances to beat FSU in what was kind of a crazy game. I don't think anybody knows what to think of this BC team, but the Cards are a 14-point favorite. That spread has held pretty firmly throughout the week so far. I mean, what's your confidence level right now with this one, Dan?
I mean, I'll be honest. Didn't watch BC Florida State. The score, I mean, just like everyone, I think it kind of shocked people. That's definitely a letdown spot for Florida State, so you wonder about that. But I will say, like, just Brohm's tone during the press conference has me a little bit, like, you know, more caution up than I thought I would going into this game. And again, he's a lot of coach speak, but just kind of the tone he had for the game, I would say I'm slightly more nervous than I expected to be going into this game. I don't think it's just going to be an absolute, you know, easy win or Boston College isn't going to roll over. But with that being said, I think we should take care of business if we play, you know, our game.
I mean, I do think that you have to be a little bit concerned about the fact that it seems like they found their quarterback, the Thomas Castellanos guy, which as Reds fans, I think we hear that name and it's hard not to think about Nick. But like he killed Florida State with both his arm and his legs last week. He looks like a little, kind of like a Malik Cunningham type player, and that's tough for any defense, let alone one that has allowed a ton of open space so far this year in ours. But I don't think they don't have a ton of weapons on the edge. They don't have a Zay Flowers type player this year. Their running game outside of Castellanos has not been good so far this season. Their defense played better against Florida State. I thought it was weird that Florida State didn't make more of an effort to run the ball consistently. They relied on Jordan Travis a decent amount in the second half. I think that our game breakers should be able to do things against them defensively. I think that if we get the ball to Thrash and Jordan with room to do damage, I think they're going to do just that. So I've got this weird feeling. Like last week I had a weird feeling that the game was going to be closer than everyone thought. I've got this weird feeling that we're going to win by more than everybody is thinking right now. I think this is going to be one of those games where you go in, we're all a little bit nervous, you know, just take care of business against a team that's riding high after playing FSU so close last week. And it's just like we look the best that we've looked so far this season. Like we hit our stride on Saturday. I won't give away my prediction just yet, but I feel oddly confident about this game compared to...
I feel like we're going to score. Like that,
I do too.
Feel confident in. Defensively, my guard is up a little bit. But yeah, I'm not predicting like a huge blowout, but yeah, we'll get to our scores, you know, in a minute.
This is also a pretty key game for BC. It reminds me actually of sort of the spot that IU was in last week, where you've got a coach that just a few years ago was being viewed as, like, I hope we can hold on to this guy. He looks like he's one of the hot names in coaching. And now the fan base is sort of teetering on the edge of being willing to let him go. I think if Indiana had beaten us last weekend, the IU fan base would have been like open ears with Tom Allen, like more open-minded moving forward, saying, you know, you played Ohio State kind of close, you beat Louisville, let's see what we do this year, maybe we can turn this thing around. And Boston College, you know, Jeff Hafley was God there just a few years ago. They've underachieved the last couple of seasons. They got off to a rough start this year, but played really well last week. If they can win a game like this and maybe give that fan base some hope of making a bowl game this year, Hafley might get back in their good graces. So it's certainly a measuring stick game for them, but we need to take care of business. Let's get this thing done. Let's get to 4-0. Do you have Dan in the dumps for this week before we get to predictions?
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. So this is what I mean. Boston College is a team where, you know, even when they're good, like if you lose to them during the year, it's kind of like a black mark on the year. Like last year, we had a nice season, but I can't get that Boston College. I can't shake that Boston College loss at all. That was just one that you can't lose.
We've lost 4 of 6 to BC, which feels
actually kind of scary.
It feels insane. Like I saw that stat and I was like, that can't be right. And then I went back and I was like, oh yeah, I think I've repressed the memories of all these games over the last few years. All right, before we do predictions, Dan, do you have Dan the Dumps for this week?
I don't have one. I mean, it was this is what I'll say. It was my son's birthday on Saturday. We rented out a indoor soccer stadium. Highly suggested if your kids like soccer, do it for your birthday. A little concerning that my son, like watching him out there, looks like he's playing like 5 times harder at his birthday party than the actual game. Like, I literally had to I'm not gonna like say anything to my son about how hard he's playing during his birthday party. I came off, I was like, why don't you play like that during your game? I'm like, God damn it, Danny, it's his birthday. Just leave him alone. I just can't help myself. But no, it was a nice birthday for him. We had a good time celebrating it, and we got him. This is where we're at in our life. We got him tickets to the Columbus Crew game. So we'll be heading there next week. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
That comment, by the way, is the biggest Bob Snard comment of all time. Like, we all become our dads. We really do.
I'm interested in other parents' response out there, like watching their kids. I don't know how parents can keep their mouths like shut during games. Like, I really like, I have an issue and I acknowledge it. Me and Kim have talked about it. Like, I even go into games, I'm like, hey buddy, you won't hear a word from me. 5 minutes in, I'm like, wake up. Like, and I'm like, you know, and I don't talk to other kids. I specifically talk to my kid. But, like, I know what's going through his head, and sometimes he just gets out in la-la land. But when he wakes up, he's great. But sometimes, you know, he's 8, or he's 9 now, so I'm not going to be too hard on him. But he has a tendency to sleepwalk a little bit.
We've got, I mean, Mike in the Mud for this week. Poor John is dealing with hand, foot, and mouth disease.
Oh, poor guy.
Which came down last Thursday. I'm like, he's doing better. Like, he's fine now. He looks bad because he's still got all those spots all over him, but he's like, he's totally fine now. He's back to being the happy kid. But I'm very concerned about the parents that I've talked to that have had this spread to parents are like, it's the worst thing that you'll ever have to go through. Like, you get like very feverish, you have a sore throat, and then the next day you've got these sores. You can't walk, you can't use your phone, like you can't sleep, you can't swallow. It feels like you're swallowing glass. And some people are like, I missed 3 weeks of work with that. It just didn't go away. I mean, two of our friends have had it. They said it was the worst thing they've ever gone through. And today I've kind of got that mild sore throat, like little fever thing that is supposed to be the start. And I'm terrified. I feel like this is what I feel like people who like were in the 1300s and they coughed and they saw blood for the first time. It's how they felt. They're like, well, it's all over now. I know what's coming next. So I am terrified that this may be the last time you guys hear from me until like before the Notre Dame game when I'm back on the mend, because this is – I don't want to go through it. It's going to be terrible. But we're – Mary's kind of got a little bit sick. Virginia showed no symptoms, so that's good. Hopefully we can avoid it. But John
– we'll cross our fingers for the Rutherfords.
John's doing better. Do you want to do score predictions? I know there's something you want to talk about too. Do you want to do score predictions first, or do you want to do that at the end?
We can do score predictions real quick.
Let's do it. Louisville, BC, Cards are a 14-point favorite. Again, this is as of we're recording this on Wednesday. Looking to go to 4-0 again for the, you know, they started, I think, 4-0 in 2016. They lost to Clemson in their fifth game, so we'll go for 5-0 next week, hopefully for the first time in a long time. Do they get it done this weekend? Does the fun roll on? Does the unbeaten September, Bromtember, continue here in the Ville.
It does. I feel like we're going to have a juice crowd for this one. It should be a nice day Saturday. Good time slot. So I'm going to say that we win. I'm going to say 45-21.
Ooh, I like it. I thought I was going to go big. I think you outdid me there. Why did I say Brom Tember, by the way? Jeff Tember is sitting right there. It's sitting right in front of me.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's can't ignore that one.
Happy Jeff Tember to everybody who celebrates. But I think Louisville wins. I think they cover the spread. I'm going to say Cards 34, Boston College 17, which would be, I mean, awesome. I would love, I mean, we've celebrated the Georgia Tech wins and the Indiana wins. It'd be nice to beat a power conference opponent thoroughly, not have it be in doubt in the fourth quarter and feel like there's little stuff to nitpick, but not a whole lot. I think we give that type of performance on Saturday, and I'm excited about it. All right, Dan, I know there's something near and dear to your heart that you want to talk about here before we say goodbye today.
Yeah, and this is just one of those things that I'm sure a lot of you, especially there in Louisville, have seen this on the news, unfortunately. Last Saturday, there was a young boy that was taken, you know, from us far too soon, Jake Luxemburger. So we actually, me and you, we are friends with Phil Radcliffe, and it was him and his wife Kelsey's nephew. And Phil is actually the brother of former Louisville receiver Scott Radcliffe. But, you know, just something so tragic and sad, and seeing the pictures of Jake, you know, my heart definitely goes out to his parents, Trey and Kate, and Jake's sisters, Riley. Jake was, you know, I think he was weeks away from his 11th birthday, but he did have their family had some Louisville ties. You know, he was born into a diehard Louisville family. I know on Jake's 10th birthday, he got to meet Peyton Siva, so he was ecstatic about that. They'd regularly go to football games, you know, with his grandparents, John and Kathy Luxemburger. They're the type of fans that would show up to games, you know, 30 minutes before a game, and they would never leave until the game's over. So I know his family are seasoned football ticket holders, so you can always find them tailgating in the Kroger tent, you know, along with Phil's family. And yeah, just you know, I asked Phil to, you know, kind of fill me in on some things about Jake, and he just sounded like the most special young guy in the world. You know, all American kid, perfect in every way, nice, polite, kind, funny, competitive, loved his family. He was a fifth grader at Kenwood Station Elementary, where he played baseball at Linden, and his dad was actually one of the coaches. So I think Jake started playing baseball about 2 years ago and apparently never looked back. You know, and I know they had a very supportive family. Phil said most games he usually would have about a dozen family members and friends in the stand. So this is one of those moments where the community is so good at times like this, just kind of wrapping their arms around, you know, a family that has to go through something like this. And I hope that anyone that listens to this, you know, if they're able to you know, spend some time in prayer and thinking about the Luxemburger family. Just an absolutely unfortunate thing to lose him. But I just want Phil and the Luxemburger family and the Radcliffe family and all friends and family associated with Jake to know that we are definitely thinking about them. And, you know, we are here to help you guys move forward.
Yeah, for sure. Well said. I mean, Louisville's such a big small town. I know you and I both know Phil and Kelsey and Scott and that family. And I also found out this week after the news spread that, you know, Mary has two cousins who are like sisters to her, and one of them, her son Ben, played on the same baseball team at Linden with Jake for the last couple of years, and they were really close. And it's one of those deals where, you know, Ben's 10, he shouldn't need to be processing death for the first time of somebody his right. age of grief. There's no reason for it. And I know they kept her kids home from school after they heard the news at the beginning of this week, and it's just so senseless and so sad, and there's just no need for it. There's a link up, I think a GoFundMe, that they're raising money for the family. I retweeted it on my Twitter timeline yesterday if you want to find it there. I can also post the link. I'll put it on the latest Card Chronicle News and Notes post today. But if you can help out in any way, certainly we appreciate it. You know, we have a fun time on the podcast talking about sports and all this other nonsense, but you know, there are things that certainly supersede that. And that entire family, both those families, all those families are going to be in our thoughts and prayers here. So somber way to end the podcast today, but we're looking forward to talking to you guys next week. Reminder, subscribe to the podcast wherever you can find your podcast. It's the best way to find out when new episodes are out there. And we'll be hopefully celebrating a 4-0 start next week and getting ready for a Friday night game against NC State. So until we talk to you guys again, go Cards.
Go Cards.